listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skulls in a pool of cerebral spinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Honor thy adversary. I recently began writing articles for a website called martialjournal.com. My first submission was entitled The Turd in the Martial Arts Punch Bowl, and it's now available to read there. In the article, I make a case that it's in the interest of everyone at a martial arts academy to keep the dangerous distractions of politics and ideology out of the training process. The first comment that the article received after being posted was from a reader whose digital handle was Superfreak. Now, this caused my ears to perk up because I have a favorite former student with that nickname. His name is Josh Woods. When he began training with me, he was just a snot-nosed teenager who was a joy to work with. But he is now an esteemed college professor teaching creative writing in Illinois. In addition, Josh published his first novel this year. It's a supernatural thriller entitled The Black Palace. He sent me a signed copy, and I look forward to digging into it soon.
I hereby command all my listeners to buy The Black Palace, read it, and submit good reviews.
Anyway, I suspect the comment was from my super freak because he's a college professor, and the question it raised specifically referred to behavior in the college classroom, as opposed to in the martial arts academy. The essence of his comment was a challenge to me to describe what a college class could learn from a good martial arts academy. Challenge accepted, super freak. In my opinion, a quality martial arts academy cultivates a culture and atmosphere that develops each student not only as a fighter, but also as a good training partner. What does that mean? Well, I covered the subject of training partners back in episode 76 of this podcast entitled, Howdy, Partner. So refer to that episode for a thorough treatment of the subject. But suffice to say that being a quality training partner means a lot of things. One short version is to say that every training partner exists somewhere on a spectrum. On one end of the spectrum is the type of partner who's little more useful than a training dummy. This type of partner stands, sits, or lies like a barely animated corpse, offering not even token resistance to whatever technique you're practicing. On the other end of the spectrum is the training partner who strenuously resists everything you try to do, even when he or she is not supposed to. Of course, neither of these extremes reflects the habit of a helpful, or even very useful, training partner. A good academy with the proper culture in place fosters the development of the proper judgment and skill as a training partner, as well as a student. Depending on the technique or drill, that might involve the partner engaging in role-playing in order to feed the student a movement or technique that they might otherwise not normally throw, or to feed in a way that they might not normally. It might involve giving the student just the right amount of resistance, or pressure, or speed, or window of opportunity, or whatever other qualities called for, in order to properly isolate a certain skill and give the student a chance to get in lots of quality reps. In the Filipino martial arts, there is even a specific word for this kind of feeding in an appropriate or remedial way. The word is agak. And of course, being a quality training partner also involves being generous with your time, allowing your partner plenty of time to train before you get your turn at improving your skill. All of this means that you treat your training partner with honor and respect. You show your understanding that despite his role in training as your adversary, he is not your enemy. Now, this can be a tough concept to grasp for some people. Some students seem to think that when, in a training exchange, their partner momentarily gets the better of them, that they have somehow lost in a significant or meaningful way. But the reality is that they just learned something that they would never have learned without that training partner. Learning without injury is never a loss. Instead of hating on your partner, you should be thanking them. And that's just what a martial arts student whose instructor has raised him right does. This kind of process, in which the relationship with an adversary is used, under a set of rules, to achieve a desirable and even noble aim, is very useful in a number of human pursuits, and is often called an adversarial process. There exist a number of other adversarial processes pursued by modern humans. A rationally conducted adversarial process harnesses the ornery human propensity for conflict and turns it into a force for good. The secret to making this kind of process work is to establish rules that minimize the encroachment of other, more toxic types of instinctive human behavior into the process. Behaviors like irrationality, hierarchical status seeking, egocentrism, magical thinking, cognitive biases, and fallacies of logic. Institutions that make good use of a rational adversarial process include courts of law, legislative bodies, and debate societies. Let's look at courts of law. By having a system of highly trained professional advocates, we call them lawyers, that use their training and expertise to take each of the opposing sides in a disputed case and act as adversaries during the trial, falsehoods and irrelevant facts are more effectively revealed than would happen in a non-adversarial process. When this is done well, each side gets an equal chance to state their case and is required to abide by the rules of evidence and decorum. Now, many people express frustration and cynicism at inevitable imperfections in this system, as would occur in any human endeavor. But to be honest, knowing humans, they would find something to bitch about in even the best designed and run courts of law. After all, with the process being adversarial, someone will be on the losing side, and people who lose love to throw shade on the process. Another adversarial process happens in legislative bodies, at least when they actually do something. But let's stay away from the politics of the year 2018 and stick to legislatures, city councils, school boards, and so on, in the abstract. The adversarial process helps to assure that, at a minimum, the voice of the minority will be heard, and in better cases, the minority will be able to secure a compromise with the majority. This has not always been the case. For the first 99.9% of our history as a species that talks to each other, there was no recourse for those in the political minority other than to keep their mouths shut and their heads down. A little under two centuries ago, a legislator in the British Parliament coined a term for the minority party that succinctly expresses its role in the modern adversarial legislative process. He called them the Loyal Opposition. Loyal because the minority party loved its country every bit as much as did the majority, and opposition because it had philosophical and policy differences with the majority party. This concept has only been a thing for, at most, a few centuries. Before that, anything resembling a legislature nearly always simply served as a rubber stamp for the pronouncements of a monarch, a dictator, or an autocrat. I think that Superfreak's question suggests that there's another form of the adversarial process we can discuss. That's when a person is engaged in debate with another person. Notice that I said debate, not red in the face, shouting each other down, argument. Debate. That's that rare occurrence when two humans hold opposing positions and discuss them in a polite, civilized manner. Now, debate can occur anywhere, and some venues are more appropriate than others. One of the most appropriate is the college classroom, where a free exchange of ideas can make up an important and formative part of a young adult's education. Just as in the other versions of the adversarial process, some rules of behavior need to be observed for debate to work the way it should. You should treat your adversary with respect, and he or she should reciprocate. Being louder, interrupting, or talking over your debate opponent does not constitute a better argument. Attacking the character of your adversary says nothing about the position you're trying to defend. It only identifies you as a jerk. Give your adversary adequate time to make his or her point, both by not interrupting and by not filibustering. Filibustering is when you don't stop talking, taking all the time for yourself. Here's a radical idea. You should actually also listen to what your opponent has to say, as opposed to thinking hard about what you're going to say next. You just might learn something. And just as a good martial arts training partner compliments you when you execute a technique well, don't be afraid to acknowledge when your adversary makes a good point. That doesn't have to mean that you agree with his overall position, just that he made a good point. It's not necessary to be disrespectful in order to show that you disagree with your opponent's position. The purpose of debate is not always necessarily to win. Sometimes it's to learn about the value of critical thinking, to develop the skill of spotting cognitive biases and logical fallacies, both in the argument of your opponent and in your own. This is a hugely important skill set to develop in order to nurture the growth of your ability to make good decisions, to express yourself well, and to hone your bullshit detector. So by definition, the adversarial process requires an adversary. If they're a good one, all the better. As I have said before, a high-quality training partner is a rare jewel to be treasured. Your adversary in debate is a training partner, too. What could be more valuable than an adversary upon whom to practice your skills? To respect and honor them is not only the right thing to do, it's in your best interest as a student and as an evolving modern human. What being respectful and courteous while still marshaling a good argument shows is that you've learned to act like a grown-up. As my Muay Thai teacher, Surachai Sirisut, says, "You don't show me courtesy for my benefit. You do it for yourself." Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think. And check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or about the Rising Phoenix Academy at my website, rpmartialarts.com.